Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are featuring a wonderful book for Father's Day. I'm of the premise these days, I'm in my 60s, and I have three children, males in their 30s and 40s, that we no longer need to have, as we would say, these man rooms, you know, where they can play their games and their big video games and their music. I think it's time that men should also expand their consciousness, awareness, and see how they're playing out in the world instead of always about cause and effect, reaction equal reaction, and an eye for an eye kind of idea. It's truly about saying, are we opening hearts, minds, and souls? And I really truly believe that it's not all about just the women or the millennials. It's really about men also. Can we start to expand our thoughts on prejudice, class, how we are looking at other people, how we can see that everyone is a variation of a human, but also we can see and say it's also too important that we see other people's points of view. There is not always one right road. There are many roads. There is not just one way. There are many ways. Just as everyone can feel differently for each other, we can feel differently within ourselves, and we all have the power of choice. Today, my guest is Dr. Leo Rosmarin. His book is Lone Soldier, a novel. It's a military adventure, and let me tell you, it is an extremely large book. I was not able to read the entire thing within this time, and I apologize to Dr. Leo ahead of time. However, when I went through the book and I was reading as much as I could, what I found is that it's an adventure just as well as everyone is having through life, through love, through challenges, struggles, and how it plays out in the world around us. Dr. Leo, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Leo, don't you think that it's about time that we all start owning up to the way in which we're engaging in the world?
I think there's no other choice. There's so many people, men and women, who are suffering from burnout that I think that the chief way of getting out of the whole burnout syndrome is to start becoming in touch with where we came from and what has formed us in the past, and start to understand where our feelings are coming from, rather than just walking on a treadmill or walking on a hamster wheel. And I think that is the cause of the burnout.
And I think a lot of it, too, is that we always say that we'd like to repeat history. We like to repeat it and bring it forward. I do as my ancestors have done. I say take what your ancestors have done and learn something differently. You know, it's so funny when we look at people say, well, I want to know what my DNA is. I want to know where I came from. Well, that's your physical DNA particles of your ancestral lineage. However, your soul that came in is not part of that. It has its own lineage of its own DNA messages. So when we say, I'm in this experience right now at this time and place, with something going on in my country, with the people that I am feeling associated with. However, you may have had another experience or a time, and you'll say, you know what? I don't have to play it like my ancestors did. We don't have to always have the same struggles, and we don't always have to have the same way of looking at the world. I can do differently. I can do better. Don't you think?
I do. Part of this DNA of the soul, if you will, is so formed by our early experiences, and a lot of this ancestral input is given to us by our parents, and they form a very big part, along with the rest of our surroundings, in adolescence. And as we move from adolescence to adulthood, there are many unresolved issues because we're so impressionable as adolescents, and many things never really get resolved. The problem is, when you talk about DNA of the soul, we're talking, in my view, about a narrative that people develop when they're adolescents, and somehow that narrative perhaps stays with them or haunts them throughout the entire life. And sometimes as adults, not even aware that it's happening. And sometimes, not all the time, but many times, the narrative is destructive. And people try to escape from that narrative that guides them all the time by drinking, by doing all kinds of things, even by spending a tremendous time in front of a television set. They're not coming to terms with their life's narrative that has been in their head since they were kids.
And what I loved about your book, The Lone Soldier, a Novel, is truly that it shows us a time period where many elders now, I know when I first read it, it was 1969 in a Pennsylvania camp. I went, oh, I wonder how close it was to my house, because I was there, because I lived in Pennsylvania. And I think about it and we say, how does all of this other existence and stories and history for people playing out right alongside of us, and we were so unaware of it? You know, we look at it, the internet now, we know about everything and anything that goes on all the time. However, when we were growing up, we very much only knew what was put out by the media at that time. And also, too, it could be happening down the street or in another state, and we might never know. So really then, we come up with preformed ideas because it's someone else's beliefs, and we call that history. Yes?
Well, it's not just history. Unfortunately, along with history, we pick up along the way prejudices that have been impressed upon us, either by our parents or by friends or by events. And the prejudices can sometimes be hardwired into our personalities, and it forms part of the narrative. And unless somebody takes a really hard look at that narrative in a very, very profound way, one may never get to the root of different prejudices that that we carry along with in our lives. And we're seeing today, of course, the terrible effect that prejudice has on our society. You just have to open the newspaper or the internet and see how horrible it is and how it's really reared its ugly face over the last few years.
I see in some ways that prejudice might have been, I can remember in the 60s when I was growing up also, is that prejudice is kind of something that people would give a glancing eye to, walk along other side of the street kind of idea. I lived in a very, very much in the top of the mountains outside of the Poconos, where it was all white and all Catholic, and it was very tiny and very secluded. And when we look at that, we say our prejudices were probably imprinted, as you said, way back when. And then I look at it and I say, oh my gosh, I went to college in New Orleans. Was I thrown into a system where there are no prejudices here in the 70s. I live here still now. And, you know, black, white, any race, any culture, any class, it doesn't matter. There truly are no limits to be able to who you engage with and how. Yet, just as you said, when you open things up in the news now, you see all these clashes. Do you think, Dr. Leo, that perhaps we are coming to a crisis point where people are saying, against the ones that are saying, I don't want to have prejudice anymore, and others are holding on to the old for dear life? What are your thoughts?
I think you're quite correct about that. I think that really prejudice is when you prejudge anybody for anything, it's not just about race or ethnicity or social class. It's really about everything. I think that the people who are trying to move beyond prejudice are really people who are trying to get past those early narratives, because many people who are really leading the battle may have had episodes and experiences in their past where either they were victims of prejudice or they've experienced the corrosive effects that prejudice, being prejudice, has. And those people really are starting to become introspective. Now, I'm not talking about quote-unquote political correctness here. I'm talking about a profound realization that there has to be a shift in the way we look at people and look at things. Those people that are still practicing prejudice just haven't gotten in touch with who they are, and they allow external narratives to cloud their thinking.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
Right, because when I looked at the word prejudice, I wrote it down on a piece of paper before, and I said, prejudice, what is it? And I wrote down underneath it, facts by who? Whose facts are we rating that? And in other words, whose truth is that? Exactly. And I think there are now so many truths because we're starting to delve into knowing who people are, what drives them, what are their life experiences. And I think that's so vitally important, and I think it's a wonderful story for everyone in your book, Lone Soldier, is that it really takes a man and a woman and takes them on their journey within history and time and what was playing out then, but it also shows their human part, the history part, what was going on then, military. It showed how people who, as we would say, the haves and the have-nots, how they clashed. And it also shows how to stand up and be righteous and powerful and be able to say, is this really who I'm willing to be going forward? I think that's what your book really encapsulated in just a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. One of the features of this book, and I've been a real avid reader of historical fiction because I also love reading history. So I enjoy to see how you have narratives that are set in a historical framework. The difference between Lone Soldier and many, not all, but many of the historical fictions that I've read is that Lone Soldier is not just you sitting and reading about a period or reading about people. The book is constructed in such a way that I literally take the reader by the hand and literally put them into a time machine so that feel like you've been transported back in time. And the book, in terms of the quality of the writing, is a very intimate type of work, meaning you as a reader are standing right next to the people. It's as if you're, it's like you're, you know, as a fan, standing right next to the characters, and you are watching them in action, talking to each other or interacting with each other, or if there's any physical movement or activity such as gymnastics or martial arts, you literally are next to these people, but it takes it one step further because not only are you next to them, but you can do something in my book that you can't do in real life when you're standing next to somebody. You can read their thoughts. So you're actually standing next to the characters. You can see them interact right in front of you, and you can also read their thoughts. So that to me was a very interesting way of going about this. I had a combat veteran who told me that he had read the book in 48 hours, and I said, how can you read such a book? It's a long book. He says, well, I did nothing for 48 hours but to read this book. I said, that's crazy. Didn't you sleep? He goes, I couldn't. I just had to finish. I read it all there. And then he said to me that he had to skip the combat parts. This gentleman had done several tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, decorated military veteran. He said that the battle scenes were so intense that he literally could feel the bullets whizzing over his head. And literally went into a PTSD type of post-traumatic stress disorder type of feeling, and he couldn't bear those parts. He actually had to skip some of the battle parts because they were too realistic. And when I told him I'd never been in combat, he looked at me and he says, how did you do that? I said, well, a lot of hard work. And I talked to an enormous number of people and really got not only out of books, but I got a lot of first-person accounts. I did tens and tens of hours of interviews with people who are experts in the areas that I write about. So that's because I wanted to get not just an accurate portrayal of the time and of the events, but to put people's, basically their first person right there. So as I interviewed these people, I was able to put the characters through the eyes of the people that I interviewed when they were describing their personal experiences. And that's kind of how I did it.
And don't you think that that's what's so vitally important? Because even as we look back on our own experiences in our life, when we're going through them, we're only seeing what's right in front of us. When we reflect on them, we can see how they created the web of our life. So really, if anyone's older and they're reading this book, again, Lone Soldier, I truly believe that they would look back and they would say, you know what, I could see how I could fit these pieces within my life. I could see how these pieces, I may have missed something. And I could see also, too, as you said, how we can walk together within the space of our real life. But I could also, too, see it is that, you know, we look back and your book is written from 1969 to 74, about Israel and U.S., but really, if you look back at that time frame, what was also occurring was Vietnam. Many times people will say, oh, we didn't even pay attention to Vietnam. It was no big deal, you know? And it took a long time to bring that history forward. So I think even what you write about in your book, I seriously do not recall. So, in other words, on this earth, there were many silos of history and engagement in the world. And isn't it interesting how we all look at our experiences, yes?
Yes, that's right. Because the book is Israel-centric, the U.S. had its hands full in the Vietnam conflict, and I was a bit young. I was just below the age of going to Vietnam. I was going to be drafted, but it was 1974, and just as I was going to be drafted, the war in Vietnam wound down, and I was never called. But
right.
I appeared. I still have my draft card, but I did attend anti-war rallies. I wanted to see what people were saying and to get the ethos of the period. And that was a big part of my life growing up during that period. And then I lived in Israel from 1970 to 1973, when Israel was flush with the victory of the Six-Day War, and the effect that it had on Israeli society just leading up to the Yom Kippur War, which was a profound national trauma because of the hubris that many Israelis had because of their victory. They really felt invincible, and it took the Yom Kippur War to find out for them to find out how vulnerable they were. So this book really very closely examines what Israel and in its relationship with the U.S. as well looked like in 1970, and it shows the cost, the terrible cost that people pay for hubris and arrogance. And again, that is also a form of prejudice, because when you start looking down at your enemies and underestimate them, that is a form of prejudice that came back to bite them, you know, in October of 1973.
Right.
And you actually feel that. There's a tremendous amount of emphasis in the book as well on the early terrorist threat. Israel was the canary in the coal mine, really. Now the whole world is caught up in all this. But from the years 1970 to 1974, Israel was the outsized target of these terrorist attacks in terms of hijackings, the massacre of the Munich athletes in 1972. I do mention the hijacking in Uganda and the Entebbe rescue. There were many, many other terrorist attacks during that period of time. There were airline hijackings that even where they flew the planes right into directly into Israel. So there was a tremendous amount going on, both culturally, militarily, politically, and it was a transition in Israeli leadership as well. And all that is being explored through the eyes of an American who ends up giving up, of all things, a basketball scholarship to join the Israeli army, someone who grew up in poverty, and the scholarship could have gotten him out of the out of his poverty, and decides to emigrate to Israel for a variety of complex reasons, which are outlined in the book.
You know, Dr. Leo, I think coming off of World War II, the world really still had that very dogmatic sight for an eye, eye for a tooth kind of idea. And it seemed to ingrain in the next generation going down, which was the generation of you and I. And I think when we think back on that, we say we remember some sense of it as we were growing up, but we also remember, I don't know if you noticed this or not, or did notice it then, but I would know, you know, with relatives or people that were of my parents' age about that time, there was a lot of deep-seated kind of anger towards different things. It was just various items, you know. And then we started to see it when, you know, the colleges were starting to have all kinds of rebellions, you know, coming out. And we would see that and how that war would play out. And it's almost like it was a sleeping target and it was just going to show up and it was going to be all over. And I think what's really happened is that how we really just squelched it over the 80s and the 90s in lieu of money or drugs or success, and now we're just seeing it all explode like an undercurrent, don't you think?
It's true. I think that the baby boomers grew up in homes of traumatized parents.
Right.
I grew up in a home. Both of my parents were Holocaust survivors, so I grew up with all that baggage. But even people who were Americans and who weren't subject to attempted genocide, but the Americans were just coming off the Depression, and we, in our generation, we don't really know. Everybody got all excited in 2008 when, you know, their stock portfolios went down by 50%. And, you know, and
right.
People did go out of work, but the Depression was something completely much more profound. So mm-hmm. between the Depression and the fact that millions of Americans, men and women, went off to war, and a half a million people didn't come back, and so many more people were injured, even though we quote-unquote won, but in fact, there's nobody wins a war. You know, you have the people who are, you know, who lose more than, you know, one side loses more than the other, but everybody loses, you know. And people came back from World War II with a lot more trauma inside their heads. We didn't understand what PTSD was and its full impact. And, you know, they called it shell shock or battle fatigue or whatever. But these people came back and then they tried to rebuild their lives. But they had their narratives and they brought it to their kids. And there was a very big attempt in that time to have their, you know, to say, well, I went through all this horrible trauma. I don't want my kids to do that and to have to deal with that. And that was kind of inculcated into the kids. And then, you know, these people became very financially successful, a big percentage. And these kids, our generation, grew up in a relatively affluent time. America was doing incredibly well. We had no national debt. Unemployment rate was very low. And I remember things were really very, very good. The issue, though, was that angst, that as soon as something like Vietnam happened, people said, why do we have to go to war? You know, war was so bad. And, you know, the Korean War happened on the heels of World War II, and that was horrible. Why are we getting ourselves on purpose into a war that's none of our business? There was a sense that it really wasn't an existential war. And to send tens of thousands of soldiers who would come back in body bags, that began to really start to eat away at American society, especially since they felt the government was not listening to its citizens. And I think that that was accurate. That really bore out later on, that we saw that the government was really out of touch. And it was our generation's way of telling the U.S. government, listen to us. We're trying to tell you. You know, it's like what Jefferson Airplane once said, hey, look, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going around. I think that's very, very telling. But our generation sort of came through. And as we began to mature, the next generation really did not have any battles to fight at that point. So there was just this headlong rush into looking for money and instant success. And that's really what brought us through the 80s. And then, of course, that continued on in the 90s with the advent of the Internet. But we didn't pay attention. And then we thought we were the only superpower on Earth. We didn't pay attention to the fact that a significant amount, part of the world was going in a different direction. And we paid for that hubris. And we started having hubris. We paid for that on 9/11, I believe. And that's when everybody sort of woke up to the fact that there's the rest of the world, too. It's not just about, you know, fun and games for Americans and Europeans.
Yeah, I think the idea that people are living so much longer now. You're having millennials who are contrasting with great-grandparents who are in their 80s and 90s. And there's such a variance in between that it's almost, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. You cannot believe it was only like 60 or 80 years between the difference. It almost feels like it's been 200 or 300 years, you know, how life has just so totally changed and how we've really just become so different in our way of who we are. Dr. Leo, do you think that the idea of war will finally be, as we will say, drop off when these next few generations are able to pass on? In other words, I don't think anyone under the age of 50 has any concept of what you and I would even be talking about.
Well, except for the fact that we still have significant numbers of troops around the world, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And for the most part, Americans aren't paying attention as much. You don't see anti-war rallies against Iraq and Afghanistan because and people have asked that. And I think the reason why people were not seeing it is because in those days, we were forced to go. People didn't want to go to Vietnam, and the government was forcing them to go. Here, they say, well, you know, they're having a horrible time, but they volunteered for it. They signed up. No one asked them to volunteer. If you volunteer, well, you get what you volunteer for. So there's almost this selfish view of, you know, that people who haven't volunteered, you know, and they basically say that, well, you know, it's not affecting me at all because, you know, I didn't, you know, volunteer. So they do have lip service to some of these veterans, and they say, thank you for your service, which has become a cliche.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I can wrap my head around it. As far as whether or not there'll be war, I just want to highlight the fact that at the end of the 19th century, there was such a huge technological jump as well, you know, with the automobile and the electric light and the phonograph and everything else, that people felt, because there was this amazing jump in technology and even communications, et cetera, that there wouldn't be any war, that people were now starting to become much more enlightened, and people were, you know, better educated, and people would know better than to go to war. That, again, was a myth, because we slid, because of that, into World War One. And instead of being enlightened, and, you know, they felt that the 20th century would be a new century devoid of war. And in fact, the 20th century was had the most destructive wars in human history. I'd like to feel that the 21st century will be better, but I wish I could share your optimism about that. I just have a feeling that the character of war will change. But I think that, and I hope it's not true, but I think that war will somehow continue. And in fact, war against our planet will continue, and that planet is fighting back. So we're, you know, it's not just war against people anymore. You know, we've waged war on planet Earth. And I think that's even more dangerous.
Yes, I think the idea that we have evolved and we have become better people is really a fallacy. And I think the idea that we've just almost been like a chameleon, we've really just changed our spots and never really were engaged in the moment, never really were being true and making the changes that were necessary. We just decided to put on another coat and walk the other way. And I think that's truly, you could see that playing out in almost everything. And definitely what you said about, you know, the war with the Earth. Can you imagine when we have a war with the universe?
Yeah, well, we're starting to see that, because I think I heard last week that India was the first country to actually shoot down a satellite. So they're very excited and proud about that, but they broke a taboo. Bad as the Cold War happened and all this other strife, there was a tacit agreement that we would not bring militarism into space. The only military use for spacecraft would be as surveillance satellites. But I do want to bring to your attention the fact that at the beginning of World War One, the flying machine was still an amazing, you know, new little toy that had just been developed. And it was, in the beginning of the war, airplanes, those nice biplanes that you see in the movies, really were just used for surveillance. It's almost exactly the same thing, you know, at the beginning of the 20th century. And it was somewhere about a year into the war where these airplanes were starting to shoot at each other. And then somebody, you know, woke up to the fact that an airplane can be used as a weapon of war. And then, of course, you know, the whole concept of military air power was born. I'm a little worried about that we're going to, in this century, within the next few years, we're going to see people shooting down each other's perhaps surveillance satellites, or even shooting down other people's spacecraft. I, you know, at the beginning of what, like we see in the Star Wars movies or
right.
Star Trek, or something like that, that's not far-fetched. And we've been naive about that. We've really kept the war out of space, but I think that's about to change.
Well, Dr. Leo, in closing, your book, Lone Soldier, is truly, I think, an exploration of body, mind, and soul and your place in the world and in how we are really engaging as humans, as countries, as people, through war, through love, through military, And we really see all of the aspects of an entire, you know, your characters, all of their entire being is really laid out on the pages. And I think for anyone to read this book is truly to be able to engage in an experience and be able to say, wow, this is truly something, and can we really feel it from the core? Your book really is very detailed, it is very concise, and it is very engaging so that you can get into the core of the story, yes?
Yes, I agree. I tell people that I know it's a long book, but so many books now are very short, and so there's this idea because many people have a short attention span. They want to get into a book, read 100 pages, and be able to get out of the book. This
right.
is not that book. This is
yeah.
a book where you go into it, and I bring you into a world, and you literally function in this virtual world that is Lone Soldier, and moving through the world. If you want to make the effort to move through this world, I believe that that effort will be rewarded by a much more profound experience than you'll get out of a 120-page novel, in my view.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Leo, thank you so much for joining us. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yes. The book has a website. It's called lonesoldierbook.com. And the book can be gotten on Amazon, and you can get it as a soft cover as well as a Kindle book. And it would be interesting for the reader to go through some of the reviews that readers have already posted on the book. Because just looking at the reviews, you'll get a sense of how people reacted to the book having completed it.
Right. Well, Dr. Leo, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more information about the book Lone Soldier, a novel by Dr. Leo Rosmarin, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to the website. A wonderful novel for almost anyone, but I will say for every male or man in your life at any age, it could be elders all the way down to 20s and 30s. It is a terrific book to read where it engages in the world of sometimes we want to say we sit down and we play video games for the adventure of the experience. Well, I would say it's about time you read about history and how it's played out in the human existence. That's what this book is all about. Please do check out the link. Have a great day. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow. Have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.